As Rafi said, I'll be speaking about searchable symmetric encryption, and this will appear at CCS next week. Can you guys hear me, or am I speaking
calm?
And so this will appear at CCS next week, and this is joint work with Reza Kermola from Johns Hopkins, Juan Gray from the labs, and Rafi Ostrovsky. Okay, so the setting that we're concerned with here is that of remote storage. So this is fairly ubiquitous. You probably back up your data on your remote server, or if you use Gmail or Yahoo Mail, all your emails are stored on the Google servers. And so the security question here is, how do we store sensitive information on an untrusted server? So the easy answer is we can just use encryption, and encryption is great because we'll be able to hide all partial information about the data. But the downside is that if we want to do anything useful with this data, the client's going to have to decrypt everything. We'll first have to download everything, then decrypt it, and then perform all those operations locally. Right. And so what we want to know is, can we enable the server to help in this process? Right. So, and in particular, can we enable the server to help search? And so we've heard a lot about searchable encryption this week, so I'm not going to give too much motivation. But I'll give a brief overview of different models for private searching. And then we'll get to the focus of this talk, which is searchable symmetric encryption. So we'll revisit some of the security definitions that were proposed for searchable symmetric encryption. We'll point out some subtle but serious issues with the previous work. We'll look at two new notions of security for SSE. And we'll give one definition of what we call the non-adaptive setting. So I'll explain what that is a little bit later. And one notion of security in the adaptive setting. So we give two definitions in each setting. So we have a simulation-based definition and a distinguishability-based definition. And we give two new constructions for the problem. And then we'll look at some instructions. So when one is considering the problem of private search, we can just use multi-party computation. And this will pretty much solve any problem related to this that we might be interested in. And so this is great because it's a very general solution, but the downside is that it'll be inefficient. Right? So typically, we'll be interested in focusing on the specific problem that we're trying to solve, and we're trying to see if we can come up with more efficient solutions. So if we're considering the problem of searching explicitly, then there's three different settings that come up. And depending on the setting that we're considering, we'll be able to use different kinds of tools and different kinds of primitives. So the first setting is when we want to search on public data. So this will be unencrypted data, such as stock quotes or news articles. So we have this unencrypted data that we're going to store on the server, and we want to search on this data, right? And so here, we're not really concerned with the privacy of the data, because it's public, but what we're interested in is hiding which pieces of the data the client is interested in, right? And so this is addressed by the work on Peer, which we've heard about this week, and its variants. And so there's a second setting, which is when we're interested in searching on user-owned data. And so this data is going to be symmetrically encrypted. And so here we have a client that owns this data that's going to encrypt it and wants to store it on the server. And in this case, because the client owns the data, he'll also be able to add some encrypted data structures that will help the server to search. And this is the setting that we're going to consider here. And this problem has been considered with the work on oblivious RAMs and more recently with the searchable symmetric encryption papers. And I'll talk about all that a little bit more. And I'll just mention the third setting, which is when we're interested in searching on third-party data, and in this case, the information is encrypted using a public key. So here we have a sender that has data, and that wants to allow a third, so the sender wants to encrypt the data stored on the server, and then we have a third party, which is the client, that wants to search on this data. And in this setting, the data arrives already encrypted, so in particular, we can't add these data structures. The client can't add any of these data structures to help the server search. And so this has been considered with the work on public key searchable encryption, which you've heard as well about this. So for searchable symmetric encryption, the scenario we have in mind is the following. So we have a client that has a collection of documents, and each document consists of a set of words. The client is going to encrypt the document collection together with this additional data structure, and he's going to send everything to the server. And as far as functionality, what we want to be able to do is we want to enable the server to support certain kinds of queries. And the kind of queries that we're interested in here are the following. It's that the server should be able to find all the documents that contain a particular keyword. and the kind of privacy guarantees we want. So I mean, really, so the kind of thing we want is we want to allow the server to help, but we want to reveal as little as possible. Right? The question is, what do we mean by as little as possible, and how do we formalize that? So I'll go over some prior work on symmetric social encryption. So SSE can be achieved using oblivious RAMs. And as far as functionality, oblivious RAMs give us everything, right? So oblivious RAMs can simulate any data structure in a hidden way. It can support conjunctive queries, binary trees, everything. So as far as functionality, this is pretty much optimal. This will solve any problem that we might be interested in. But I mean, as far as searching on encrypted data, and for privacy, it's also optimal. It'll hide everything, even the access pattern. So in particular, the server won't learn which documents the client is interested in. So okay, so since it achieves optimal functionality and optimal privacy, why do we want to keep thinking about this problem? And it's because of efficiency. And in particular, the work on Oblivious RAMs requires a logarithmic number of rounds for each read and write. And so the question is, can we search over encrypted data in a single round or in a constant number of rounds? So to search encrypted data with constant rounds, with absolute privacy, so absolute privacy in the sense of Oblivious RAMs, we have no idea how to do that, and so this would be a nice open problem. And so the next step is going to be, since we have no idea how to do this with absolute privacy, then the next logical step is to say, well, what if we relax the security requirements? So if we're willing to give up some security, can we actually achieve more efficient schemes? So how do we relax the security definition? Well, we're going to leak the access pattern, right? So maybe we don't care so much if the server learns which documents the client is interested in. So what does it mean to leak the access pattern, but nothing else? So the point is that defining this formally is a little bit delicate. And there's been 3 attempts at doing this, but there's issues with all previous attempts. And so we'll go over the definitions now. And so the papers that we're gonna consider are the first one by Songwagner and Perry, it's Practical Techniques for Searches on Encrypted Data. The second one is by Go, it's Secure Indexes. And the third one is by Chang and Winsemacher, Privacy Homes and Keyword Searches on Remote Encrypted Data. Okay, so now we'll review the security definitions. So before we review the security definitions, just want to sort of make clear what kind of intuition we're after. So what do we want intuitively from such a scheme? So in previous work, the intuition has been characterized as follows. So a secure SSE scheme should not be anything beyond the outcome of a search. Okay? And the outcome of a search is defined as the memory addresses of the documents that contain a certain keyword. So if I'm the client and I'm searching for some keyword, then the outcome of the search is going to be a pointer or some address to every document that contains the word, right? So we're willing to leak that, but we'll just note that in this setting, we're going to do multiple queries. And in this particular case, it's important to note that different keywords can lead to the same search outcome. So if I search for the word UCLA, and then I search for the word iPad, they might be contained in the same exact documents. And the previous work actually leaks more than just the search outcome, it leaks the search pattern, which is this information that tells you whether two keywords were for the same word. So this is just to sort of point out that a slightly better intuition than what's typically considered is that a secure SSE scheme should not make anything beyond the outcome and the pattern of research. And this is actually what we're actually going to try to achieve. That being said, so the SWP paper the way that this paper defines security for symmetric searchable encryption is as semantic security. So this is the classical notion from Google Web Server Kali, and this basically says that if any function in plain text that can be computed from the ciphertext can be computed from the length of the plain text. And so the problem with using this definition in the context of searchable encryption is that in this particular context, the adversary also gets to see the search outcomes and the search pattern. Right? So he gets more information than just the ciphertext. And this wasn't considered in the SWP paper. So they had provably secure schemes, but they proved it against the wrong definition. And so what ended up happening is the constructions actually leaked information. So this was addressed by Go's paper and by the Chang and Winsemacher paper. But there's issues with those definitions as well. But before we get to those, I'll have to explain a little bit more how these objects sort of work.
So you're saying that what they proved, so the proof was incorrect, or the theorem was just not strong enough?
I'm assuming the proof is correct, but they use the wrong definition.
So they, but the definition you put seems strong, really seems very strong. So, so it says that there's nothing in the but in fact it leaks something. So
well, so, okay, so they're putting, what's your saying, right? So you're saying that,
security is as good as you can get, right?
But if you're given additional set information, maybe you can distinguish the documents. Uh-huh. Like the set information is access pattern. So they say, you know what, let's forget about the access pattern that we leak. And just prove semantic security. Assuming there's no set information.
Exactly.
But because there is set information, this proof is meaningless.
But isn't semantic security robust to set information?
No. I can leak information that allows you to distinguish two documents, right? And then what they do.
So it's robust to a priori knowledge, right? this is leaking from the ciphertext itself. So it wouldn't be captured by the observer information. So the way these objects are built is, so there's basically four algorithms. There's a key generation algorithm which takes a security parameter and outputs a symmetric key. There's a build index algorithm that takes a symmetric key and a set of documents and outputs a secure index. There's a trapdoor algorithm that takes the key and the word that you want to search for and outputs a trapdoor. And a search algorithm that takes the index and the trapdoor and figures out which documents contain the word associated to the trapdoor. And so the way they're used in practice is we have a client, so this is just to give you an idea of sort of how this works. We have a client that has the plaintext documents in his collection. He's going to generate an index, which is this auxiliary secure data structure. And it's going to encrypt this data, and he's going to send everything to the server. Right? And at a later time, he's going to want to search for a keyword, so he's going to generate a trapdoor using the trapdoor algorithm. And he's going to send the keyword to the server, and the server will return the appropriate documents. Okay. So the important objects here are the encrypted documents, the secure index, and the trapdoor.
The server is allowed to know which index which it is matched.
I'm sorry?
The server is allowed to know which documents match the question.
Yes, exactly. But so we require that from looking at the index, you shouldn't be able to learn any information other than that, right, about the documents. And you shouldn't know what word you're searching for.
Each document is encrypted separately.
I'm sorry?
Each document is encrypted separately.
Yes. So you sort of do this. So you do this completely separately. So for example, you know, you'll just use a symmetric key cipher that's independent of the of this index construction.
Yeah,
so you just encrypt this separately.
The server knows the boundaries between the documents. It knows
this is
the ciphertext for document A.
Yes. So that's going to leak the length of the documents. Okay, so in order to sort of talk about the definitions, we had to introduce these sort of auxiliary notions, and one of them is the history. And so the history is composed of the plain text document and the keywords, and this is the information that the client wants to hide from the server. Then we have the view, which is everything that the server is going to see, so it's going to be the encrypted documents, the index, and the trapdoors. And then we have the trace, which is going to be the information that we're willing to leak. And so this is going to be the length of the documents, the outcome of the searches, and the search pattern.
Or outcome, you mean which document is encrypted?
Yes, exactly. So if you think of the search outcome would be some pointer to the documents.
And by search pattern, you mean
whether two queries
is the same encrypted?
Yes, exactly.
So in particular, it is somehow implicitly required that even that if I search for the same keyword that I must leak it, that it has to be deterministic? In other words, if I search for
well, it doesn't have to be, but all the schemes that she has to are. So as I said, the intuition before was the secure SSE scheme should not leak anything beyond the outcome of the pattern of search. So formally, what we want to say is that any function with the documents and the keywords that can be computed from the encrypted documents, the index, and the trapdoors, can be computed from the length of the documents, the search outcomes, and the search pattern. Right? So you can imagine what this would look like. Formally, we'd have an adversary that would get the view, which are these objects, and which have to compute a function of the history, which are these objects, and we'd have a simulator that would be able to simulate it using only the trace, right, which is the information that we're leaking. So Go proposed the notion of indistinguishability against certain keyword attacks, so in 2CK. And what this definition says is that any function of the documents that can be computed from the encrypted documents and the index can be computed from the length of the documents and the search outcomes. And so this is better than the SWP definition. But the problem here is that this doesn't say anything about the keywords or the trapdoors, right? So this doesn't guarantee that the server won't learn any information about the keywords. And that's one of our requirements.
So in other words, his definition is like it's kind of completely just at the very beginning, you publish the document and you're saying...
And you have a guarantee that your index, this auxiliary data structure, won't leak any information about the documents. But when you want to search later on and you send this trapdoor, you don't have a guarantee that you won't learn which, you know, some bits about the word that you're looking for.
But you might even learn the document itself.
Sorry?
According to this definition, it would prevent you. So if I actually give you the trapdoors,
yeah, so
prevent you from learning the documents?
Well, yeah, but the way the definition is structured, you're not going to get the trapdoors. So it doesn't say anything about the trapdoors.
Yeah, I know, but what I meant was if you have a system that's secure, only according to this definition.
Right.
And theoretically, once you give it the trapdoors, it might even learn the contents of the document.
So he's saying, assume trapdoors always contains the documents. The trapdoor is like contains something secret, and for a stupid reason, appends the document. It will not compromise the security of this definition because the attacker never knows the trapdoors. So, for example, a scheme which is where trapdoors obviously give the keywords might satisfy the definition. If I understand correctly.
Right, exactly. Yeah, it does be it. Okay, so this doesn't say anything about keyloads and trapdoors. And so you might say, this might be related to what you're saying, I'm sure, but you might just want to prove that the scheme is, that the indexes are secure in the sense of in 2CK, the trapdoors are secure according to some other definition. And so in the paper, we actually have an example of a scheme that we can prove is in 2CK, and the trapdoors are secure in some reasonable sense. But when taken together, the adversary can recover the keywords. So I think it's related to so it's basically suggests that you should really consider the security of these things as one object, not separate. So then there's a Shanghai missing macro definition. And so this basically says that any function that can be computed about the documents and the keywords, given the ciphertext, the index, and the trapdoors, can be computed from the length of the documents and the search outcomes. So this is better, right? I mean, here we actually say something about the keywords. Protecting the keywords, and the adversary gets the trapdoors, so this is reasonable. But one issue is that it doesn't say anything about the search pattern, right? So the adversary, if we're thinking of the trace, right, gets the search outcomes, but doesn't get the search pattern. And so I said that all the previous that these schemes leak the search pattern. So since they have proofs of security, either their proofs are wrong or something isn't right. Right, because this definition is stronger than what their construction achieves. And so what happens is they have this is the definition that they give, but when they actually prove security, they assume that you only make unique queries. Right. So that's how the proofs go through. So one thing we'd like to do is sort of take this out of the proof and put this in the definition. So did that make sense? Right. So we'd like to sort of maybe weaken the definition and then prove our constructions against this weaker definition instead of having a stronger definition and messing with the proof so that it works.
But why would you want to repeat a query if you already have an answer?
You might be interested, who knows, you might be interested in searching again for something else much later. It's not something you want to...
You never Google your name twice in a day?
No.
Right.
How can I tamper security of the schema? Because you'll get the same answer. It seems like if they can prove something under this thing, searching again shouldn't be helpful.
So the proof breaks down if you have asked twice for the same keyword. You can show that it breaks down.
So it's not deterministic? It's answer somewhat deterministic? Or is this the answer to me?
I mean, so the point is, the server's going to, if you search twice, which could happen, right?
Yeah.
The server's going to know that you searched twice.
Sure.
Right? I mean, that's going to be leaked.
Okay.
All I'm saying is that the definition doesn't capture that.
Okay.
So I don't know. No, I'm saying that the actual keyword is the same.
Okay.
Right. So another thing about the definition is that if you actually look at the order of the quantifiers, it implies that there will always exist a simulator that can actually evaluate the function on the documents and the keywords. right? So this is a simulation type definition. And so what this basically is saying is that even if you have a completely insecure scheme, you can always prove it true according to the definition, just trivially, because any scheme is secure according to this. But so that's not that big of a deal. I mean, that can be fixed. You can reverse the quantifiers or do some other stuff to fix it. But there's sort of something else that's with this definition, and it's that it only guarantees security against non-adaptive adversaries. So I'll sort of explain what we mean by non-adaptive. So it means that a non-adaptive adversary is one that makes search queries without seeing the outcome of the previous searches. So it makes all its queries at once. And an adaptive adversary is one that makes search queries as a function of the outcome of its previous searches. And so what are the implications of adaptiveness? So schemes that are non-adaptively secure should be used in the following way, which is the client should generate its encrypted documents and its index, send that to the server, then generate all the keywords that it will want to search for, and send the trapdoors to the server, right? And then uncover the appropriate documents. And so this is kind of a natural setting, a very useful one. What we would want is, you know, the client to send his documents and his index, and then send his first trapdoor, receive the appropriate documents, and, you know, at that point, maybe as a function of the documents he got back, decide on the second keyword. And so this is sort of how searching encryption is typically motivated. And so that requires sort of adaptive security. So I said that the natural setting is the adaptive setting, but you know, there are many cases where non-adaptive security is useful. So we give definitions for both settings. And so basically what we want to say in the non-adaptive setting is that any function about the history that can be computed from the view can be computed from the trace. Right? This is the intuition that we gave before. But the trick is, what do you include in the history and the trace and the view? And so the history is basically the documents and the keywords, the encrypted documents, the index, and the trapdoors. So these two things weren't considered in the second definition that we looked at, the A2CKA definition. And in the trace, we want to make sure that the search pattern is there. Right? This is what wasn't considered in the Chang-Lin-Samaka definition. And we also want to make sure that all of the quantifiers sort of have the right order. Okay, so I'll give a sort of very, very high-level view of our construction. We'll see an intuition about sort of what it looks like. So if you have a client that has a document collection, he's gonna process it, and he's gonna pick out all the distinct keywords that are in this collection. So you know, if you say that the document collection is only composed of three words, Austin, Baltimore, and Washington, then he's gonna build a linked list for each of these words. And so if Austin is in document three, he's gonna insert the identifier of this document in the first node. And if it's also in document six, he's gonna insert this identifier, etc. Right? So he builds this list for each of the words. Then what is it? So then he's going to generate a random symmetric key, K1, and he's going to insert it. So he's going to look at the first word, he's going to insert it in the second to last node. And he's going to use that key to encrypt the last node. He's going to generate another key, and he's going to put that in the first node, and use that key to encrypt the second node. Right? So he's just going to sort of work backwards and encrypt every node of the list. And so he's going to do this for each list. And at some point, we're going to get to a point where we have the lists that are partially encrypted, but the first node of each list is still plain text. So how do we encrypt the first nodes? So the first thing he's going to do is he's going to use this random permutation. He's going to apply that to the first word, Austin, and that's going to point him. So this is a table, right? This is just a table with different addresses, And so he's going to use a surrounding permutation. It's going to point him, it's going to give him an index into the table. And he's going to store the pointer to the first node for Austin here. And then he's going to generate a random key, and he's going to encrypt the first node. Then he's going to use a surrounding function on the word that's going to get him another key, KA, and he's going to use that key to encrypt the element of the table. Okay, so and then he's going to do this for Baltimore. So he's going to apply this surrounding permutation, give him an index into the table, store the pointer to Baltimore's first node, learn another key, encrypt this node, and then use this random function to get key, to encrypt this table element. And so we basically encrypted all the lists. And we're going to store all this on the server. So just to give you an idea of what the search algorithm looks like. So if the client is interested in searching for the word Baltimore, he's going to apply the pseudorandom permutation to the word, who's going to give him an address, this is going to apply the pseudorandom function, who's going to give him a key, and he's going to send both as the trapdoor to the server. The server's going to look at the address, and that's going to give him a pointer into the table. He's going to look at the key, and that'll allow him to decrypt this element of the table. And it's going to reveal another key and a pointer to the first node of the list. So he's going to use KA to decrypt this. So now he knows that whatever word the client was searching for is contained in documenting. And it's going to reveal another key and another pointer. He's going to decrypt that. And now he knows that it's contained in documents A and documents N, which he can return. Right? And so the documents are encrypted. And he doesn't learn anything about the words that the client is searching for.
So I feel like the priority knows that one word is attached three times. Even without the quiz, he knows how many times.
Yeah. So there's a lot of details. That's right. So there's a lot of details that I'm skipping over. We have to pad things, and we have to shuffle things, and so we have to be careful. What we do here, but that's just a high level view of what the construction looks like. So another issue that didn't go over was we have this table, right, where we have our pointers to the first node of the list, and we index into this table using the operator pseudorandom permutation. And so this is going to be very large, right? It's going to be exponentially larger than the size of the words. So we're going to have a huge number of entries into this table, and we're not going to have that many entries, right? We only have the number of distinct words in the document collection. So we don't want to store, this huge amount of data. So we have this very sparse tables with a large address space and a small number of entries. So we use SKS dictionaries by Fredman, Cummins, and Zemrity, and this allows us to store the tables with space that's linear in the number of entries and the number of distinct words, and it gives us constant lookup time. So now I'll sort of go over our adaptive definitions. So I'll just give the intuition for this. So for adaptive security, what we want to say is that any function about the partial history that can be computed from the partial view can be computed from the partial trace. So what I mean by partial is that if you think of the interaction between the client and the server, there's a document, an index, and then there's multiple queries. And so what we want is we want the security to hold over every at every time step, right? If you think of the time t equals 0, we have a document and an index. At time t equals 1, the client makes the first query. We want to make sure that the scheme is secure all throughout. So I mean, that's sort of if that's a good intuition, but that's sort of what it is. And so so we have the partial history. So at time t equals 0, the partial history would only contain the documents, and then at time t equals 1, it would contain the first keyword. And that's sort of what we do for the partial view and the partial trace as well. So the question is, do we need new SSE constructions, right? Maybe the previous ones are adaptively secure. And so the problem with proving this notion of adaptive security with at least in the simulation paradigm is that you have to be able to, the simulator at some point is going to commit to an index. And at a later time, it's going to find out the outcome of the keywords that he has to fake, right? So at time t equals 0, he's going to simulate the adversary with an index, and then he's going to find out. Then the adversary is going to make a query, right, for a keyword, and the simulator is going to receive the outcome of that search. And at that point, he has to be able to fake a trapdoor that will work with the index that he previously committed to. But this is before he's actually even known what the query, what the outcome of that query was. And so the previous constructions sort of don't allow you to do this. And unfortunately, this is expensive. So we have a construction that does this. It's similar to our first construction, but we use more padding tricks and we pre-process all the data, so it's much less efficient. But it actually allows us to play these tricks where the simulator can commit to the index before the query is issued. And the simulator is still able to give a valid trapdoor. So if the adversary takes the trapdoor and takes this old index and uses them together with the search algorithm, they'll be able to recover the right documents. So he won't have any idea of what's going on with this. And so we get a blow up, but it's constant in the size of the trapdoors, in the size of the index, and in the search time for the server. But sort of asymptotically, it's still the same as our first instruction.
So what things do you use? I mean, what is the high level idea? I mean, what is the
what we do is so we generate a table, right? And so we have the so we take each distinct word in the document collection, and we append a counter to it. So if the document so we look at the word. It says contained in document 3, so we put, you know, the word concatenate with 1. We look at if it's contained in the second document, we take the word concatenate with 2, right? So we sort of append this counter to it, and we store that in a table. And so then what we do is we count the maximum number of times that a document appears in this table, and we pad it so that every document appears the same number of times. And so basically, what happens is that when you're actually doing the simulation. The simulator can just build that randomly because it always has the same number of documents just randomly placed. He gives that to the adversary, and when he needs to fake a trapdoor, as long as he knows the search outcome, so he knows which documents which documents his trapdoor have to be valid for, he can just pick random addresses in the table.
And he can,
and he can just give that.
And he can fake the DRM value, I guess.
Yeah, because that, I mean, that's so. Well, I mean, so there's no PRF, it's actually a PRP, because we're just randomly placing them in the table. But there's just a random address.
But he has to fix the initial key, almost the initial.
No, so there's no initial keys. It's actually just a table with just entries of document IDs.
So this F of host, he never keeps to himself, he never gives them.
He doesn't even use F anymore. Yeah. It's just P.
Yeah.
So it's just a table with just identifiers of documents that are randomly placed, but they all have the same number. So then you can just pick whichever one you want to say, you know, here's a random address, and the adversary is going to look that up and get the correct documents back. So this is just a table comparing the different schemes. So here N is the total number of documents, and D is the number of documents that contain the word. So as I mentioned before, the work on oblivious RAMs hides the access pattern, and it's secure against adaptive adversaries. But it requires a logarithmic number of rounds, right? So, so the previous papers that we considered don't hide the access pattern. Actually, none of them do. And the server computation is linear in the number of documents in the document collection. And so our schemes are linear in the number of documents that contain the word, right? So they're essentially optimal as far as search time on the server. And all the sort of all the other work achieves constant rounds, one round. But only the work in oblivious RAMs and RCC2 construction are secure against adaptive adversaries. And so we also consider some extensions in the paper. I'll just go with the main one. So we also consider the multi-user, what we call the multi-user SSC setting. And so here we have an owner that has some data. He's going to create an index for it. He's going to submit it to the server, and he wants to allow any one of a group of people to search through his data. Right? So you can imagine if a professor wants his students to search through his data, he would, you know, use this kind of stuff. And so in the multi-user setting, the security requirements for the indexes and the trapdoors are basically the same as the single-user setting. So we want the indexes not to leak any information about the documents, and we want the trapdoors not to leak any information about the keywords. But we have some additional requirements, and because we're in a group setting, so we want revocation. So the owner should be able to revoke the search privileges of any of the users, and that should be robust against collusions. And we also have the notion of anonymity. You know, it's not really the server's business to know who's initiating the search. So we want both of those security requirements on top of the ones for the single user schemes. And in the paper, we give a simple construction that transforms any single user scheme to a multi-user scheme and basically build it out of broadcast encryption, which is where we get the revocation property from and surrounding permutations.
So
the
users are owners of the data?
No, sorry. So there's one owner, right? So there's so this guy, he owns this, so he has a
mm-hmm.
he has a document collection,
right?
And so he's going to build the index and he's going to store everything on this
mm-hmm.
on this untrusted server.
Right.
But he wants to allow some group of people to search this data.
So he'll give them trapdoors or something.
No. We want them to be able to generate their own trapdoors.
Oh, without sharing anything with
the owner. Well, yeah, they're going to share something. But they shouldn't have to contact him each time they want to search in order to get a trapdoor.
I see.
So they want to be able to do it on their own. Right. So, yeah, so that's the idea. And so we have this sort of a transformation that gets you from a single user scheme to a multi user scheme in the paper. So the open questions in this area are basically there's what I mentioned before, having a constant realm scheme that hides everything. Even the access pattern. So this will basically give us sort of the best of both worlds as far as the security of oblivious RAMs, but the efficiency of the weaker schemes. And there's also, you know, searching for Boolean combinations of keywords, which probably heard a lot about this week. And so conductive searches have been addressed in the symmetric key setting by Boulay's and Waters, and public key setting by Perkin and Boolean Waters, but I don't think anybody's done disjunctive searches yet, so that's sort of still in the end. So the conclusions are basically that, you know, if you have a completely secure scheme like oblivious RAMs in order to solve this problem, you know, and you want to sort of weaken it in order to get security, it can be a delicate operation. So we point out some issues with the previous attempts to do this. We introduce a new definition. So we have so in the non-adaptive setting, we have a simulation-based definition and the simulability-based definition, and we show that they're equivalent. And in the adaptive setting also, we have simulation and simulation based. And we have efficient and practical constructions, and we also introduce the multi-user setting. So we're not considering modifications. We do consider updates. So if you want to add to your data collection, but not if you want to actually change. I mean, that's, so in that sense, I mean, you would need some kind of homomorphic properties or something.
For just adding documents.
Yeah. So we can add documents, but we can't modify documents.
No, but you said you need homomorphic properties to add documents?
No, to modify. If you wanted to modify the documents that are already stored.
So when you add a document, do you get information about the history? So
no.
Because
you add it on the end of the list, or
yeah, basically. So
you know it, so if somebody had already searched for a keyword that appears in it, would you know that this keyword appears even though
in the new one?
Yeah.
No. I mean, if the search, so are you saying if you do it, if
so suppose previously you searched for
the word
Baltimore,
right?
And so now you open this list, right? So
mm-hmm.
you have all these documents that contain Baltimore.
Right.
Now you want to add a new document that also contains Baltimore.
Right.
So you have to add it to the end of a list that is already open, or maybe I didn't understand correctly.
We're going to create a brand new list.
Oh,
that's
okay.
Basically what we're going to do. So you're going to know. I mean, so you know that. The old documents within the word Baltimore, but you won't know that the new document contains the word Baltimore, unless you search for Baltimore again.
But do you have to review the entire index? Because it seems like, looks like you have to review the entire index or not. Not the real that you make.
Well,
but that's
sorry.
The IP code, I mean, you already have a permutation, so when you stick the new one, and there is only one slot, then
well, so I mean, so the way we do this is kind of, I mean, we just recreate a brand new index. It's completely separate. I mean, you could conceive of ways of manipulating the list on that, but that's what we're concerned.
And what is the overhead of the index? Is it proportional to the size of the data?
The index, yes. So, yeah, it's
so
it's n. Yeah. I mean, it's all back in the number of documents. I mean, in the documents.
So it can document have to be right under the proportion to the entire database.
No, no, no. So if you're adding a document, you're just adding something that's proportional to the documents you're adding, the size of the documents you're adding.
So you just remember that it's a new document, and the next time you're searching two different places.
So if you're gonna do, so if you've updated and you want to search again, you're gonna send a trapdoor for the, so you're gonna send a trapdoor for the first one, and for the second. Yeah. So it's, you know, ideally you would like something that, you know, a little bit better for you. But for this construction, not sure.
So does the public key, is public key thing that satisfy automatically semantic key definition? I'm just curious. This work of crafting.
So that's much less efficient.
The
public key setting, the best that we can write is square root of n in the size of the database. And here you can do things which are much more efficient, but in terms of searching.
No, but this IDs of this keyword search or whatever.
So to update, you have to write square root of n, where n is the size of the database. The public key setting is much less efficient.
But ignoring the update will satisfy the definition of the public. Of course, it's much less efficient.
No. Reading you can use standard PIR. It's a completely different model. Here you encrypt data, so it's private key,
right.
And so it's incomparable to the public key.
Right.